This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. And by Unmanned Systems and Solutions, USAS, a combat veteran-owned company that repairs all types of drones. If you're a consumer who owns a drone, a small business using drones, or a drone manufacturer looking for sophisticated repair, distribution, and warehousing, look into USAS. For more information, visit unmannedsas.com/UAV Digest. You're listening to episode 183 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Good, David. Very good. It's been kind of a crazy day. Every time I turned around, there was another drone story that we needed to get into the show for this episode. They just kept coming in right and left. Lots of big, important things happening.
Yeah, I know. And that's the we usually have a rule that we lock down our show notes just like the day of. We record this on a Thursday night, and well, I came in tonight, and there's a lot of stuff in the show notes that I don't know a lot about, so I'm going to lean on my co-host. So we've got the Drone Advisory Committee, or DAC, Dubai Taxis, Freedom to Make Your Drone Bigger, Better, and Faster. We're going to have a discussion about NATE, Amazon Goes LAPES. Now, for anyone who's a C-130 fan like me, that's an old school standard that they don't do anymore, which is the low altitude parachute extraction system.
Ah, I wondered what that meant.
LAPES. And a lot more news I don't understand. So with Max holding my virtual hand, let's get started. Well, our first news story, actually, I threw in the show notes earlier this morning, so I'm partially to blame. And that was, this was from our friends at the FAA. The Drone Advisory Committee builds consensus. They have a new DAC, which is the Drone Advisory Committee. And they held their second meeting on January 31st in Reno, Nevada. So what's the DAC? The DAC is the RTCA Federal Advisory Committee, comprised of executives who represent a wide array of stakeholders, including unmanned manufacturers and operators, traditional aviation groups, labor organizations, radio and navigation equipment manufacturers, airport operators, state and local government officials, and academia. But they still haven't invited us, Max.
And they've got everybody else involved in this, which is good. That's the way to, you know, put together a committee looking at some broad issues.
So what are they looking at?
So the committee has reviewed three draft tasking documents. So what they're doing is sort of laying out an agenda, the objectives, all of that sort of thing for three different, I guess they'd be subcommittees. The first one is the roles and responsibilities of federal, state, and local governments with respect to regulating and enforcing drone laws. So, of course, this is a big issue. We've talked about this so many times, David, and what this group is going to do is sort of start to tackle some of those issues. You know, aviation has a long history of establishing who's got control over what airspace, what are the privacy issues, who can regulate what, and all that. And now we throw drones into the mixture. And as we see now, we have this conflict right now between states who want to regulate drones, especially at low altitudes, let's say, and the FAA that's used to a different regulatory viewpoint. So that's the first tasking statement that was created. We'll have some links in the show notes where you can go and take a look at this. But that's number one.
Number two is technological and regulatory mechanisms that would allow drone operators to gain access to the airspace beyond what the agency currently permits under the small UAS rule, which is really kind of cool because I guess this could be summed up with BLVOS, otherwise known as beyond visual line of sight. We know that there's a lot of things like precision agriculture, and we're going to talk a little bit about telephone pole inspections and tower inspections. They want to be able to facilitate those kind of events that are beyond the scope of what the small UAS rules were. And something we should mention, Max, is the FAA isn't sitting on this. They're a little bit like the success they had off of the drone registration system. They've got interim recommendations are due by May of 2017, which is a little more than 3 months away from now. Final recommendations by October 2017. So they're really putting the hammer down to get this stuff taken care of. And the third one is the infamous how to pay for it all.
Funding.
Someone's got to pay for something. And in this day and age, we don't know where the money's coming from or who it's going to and what executive order is going to get signed off on it, et cetera. So that's the interesting part is, you know, the third part is it's got to get paid for.
And that tasking document isn't published yet. The first two are published, and you can find those on the webpage that we'll have a link to. But that third one, funding, is not published. And what we see here in the FAA press release is that they being the FAA, has taken feedback from the DAC on that third tasking statement, and they are going to finalize it, the FAA, in the coming weeks, and then it'll be posted on the RTCA website. So that one is still to come.
And that's kind of understandable given the smooth transition that we've had in the last couple of weeks. There's a lot of organizations we just got our Department of Transportation secretary, so I can understand why the funding part is sort of lurking in the background because we're just getting up and running with a new administration here in this country. So that's going to take a toll. But the next DAC meeting will be held in May 3rd in Washington, D.C. And the FAA, of course, will invite Max and I to cover that on May 3rd because that's between our birthdays. So we should be in Washington, D.C. together. So, but besides that, let's talk about, would you get into a taxi that's flown by somebody else to go across town or by nobody else to go across town? There was a lot of different stories about the same topic, which is Dubai wants man-sized drones that you get in and you fly and they're being flown by someone else or they're automatic.
Yeah, the UAE, the United Arab Emirates, has an objective to shift fully 25% of the passenger trips in Dubai to autonomous vehicles. And they want to do that by the year 2030. They have been running some experiments with that EHang 184. We talked about that some time ago. I remember, David, that was shown at, I think it was at CES. And as I recall, we kind of were skeptical. Well, they've been testing that in Dubai, and that's apparently part of this plan to move to autonomous vehicles. Now, it's an interesting vehicle. The passenger capacity is 100 kilos. The idea is that you would get into one of these things, you would use the touchpad in front of the seat to select your destination, and the EHang 184 would deliver you there. These have a 30-minute flight time, a 50-kilometer range. Now, they do say that the flights of these taxi drones would be monitored by a remote control room on the ground, of course. These would be controlled through the 4G mobile internet. Dubai is in the United Arab Emirates are really moving ahead with this.
I don't know what to think. We did want jetpacks and flying cars, but I hope that the tests go really successful because I hate to think what happens if something goes terribly wrong. Autonomous vehicles are not just the ones that fly. They are purchasing 200 Tesla Model S's and Model X's.
That's right. So when they look at moving over 25% of the passenger trips to autonomous vehicles, it's not just in the air, it's on the ground as well. So, it seems to me that a lot of these technologies would kind of cross over from air to ground. I don't know if Tesla and EHang are collaborating in any ways or sharing any technologies. I kind of think not, because I haven't seen anything like that. And yeah, David, if they get this thing started by July of this year, I would be spectacularly impressed.
You know what else I was thinking about when I was reading these articles? It's interesting that a nation, the United Arab Emirates, which most of its riches comes from oil, is moving to electric technologies for their own country.
Yeah, there's an irony there, isn't there?
The Yichang is electric as well as the Tesla vehicles. So I thought that was kind of interesting that they've got so much money they can afford not to spend money on the thing that made them the money. It's interesting.
Yes.
But let's move on to bigger, badder, faster. Chris Ballard thinks he's got a better idea for the sport of drone racing. And this was from Digital Trends. He's set up the Freedom Class Giant Drone Racing. Well, we knew this was going to happen. Our little mini quadcopters aren't big enough and fast enough. We need to have bigger, faster Formula One level drones, which you mentioned the word Formula One to my co-host, and you can see the saliva come out of his mouth and the heart palpitations. What do you think, Max? Bigger, better, faster?
I think it needs to be. My criticism, and this has been shared by others, of drone racing is that while they're great for the pilots, they're not so great for spectators. They're very small, and they travel really fast, and it's hard to watch them. It just simply is. So what we see Ballard doing here is saying, well, let's make them large enough so that you can actually see them. And that's the strategy. Now, he's testing, or the organization is testing some initial models. They still have some work to do. One of the issues that he mentions as being significant is because these drones are so large, and they look to be like about, I don't know, 3 feet or a meter maybe in length. But one of the issues is that requires a lot more power, like 800% more power. And now you're talking about a lot of electricity inside these things. So, I mean, that's something you have to deal with, something you have to design for to make sure that they're safe. So they're planning to run a race, the first race, later this year, and they have hopes for eventually this becoming an international series. There's a video that they have of some first test flights that we'll have in the show notes. I think these guys are onto something. This strategy of going to larger drones, it makes a lot of sense for me.
You just like the Formula One analogy.
Yeah.
But you got a point. Even the drone racing I've watched on television is hard to watch. I'm not a fan of watching the drone racing from a first-person view. It kind of gets me nauseous. So this is another way to broaden it out. We'll have to follow that up, and maybe we can probably try to get Chris Ballard on the phone, or at least fcracing.com, which is their website. So, and we have a video also, so check the show notes for that. So let's talk about Nate. Now, Nate actually is the owner of our cafeteria in my office, but this is Nate, which is the National Association of Tower Erectors. And no, this is not a pornographic show. We're talking about things like power towers or wind towers.
Cell towers. Yeah.
Large metal structures that you really don't want to climb, even though there are people who are inspectors who do it for a living and get paid very well to do it. But using your quad to quickly inspect the tower and doing be able to do multiple towers a day. But you need guidance and structure, right? You like how I did that? Guidance and structure.
Yes, very good. Now, they've released the second edition of a resource document that's called the NATE Unmanned Aerial Systems Operations Around Vertical Communications Infrastructures. And what this document is intended to do is to address UAS operations around these tower structures. And the second edition, it actually updates the document to incorporate the FAA Part 107 rules. I think this represents an excellent best practice that other industries might follow. The document goes into a lot of detail about, well, just drones in general, but also Part 107 and what the requirements are, what the prohibitions are, the restrictions. It's a very good educational document. But what this organization has done for its members is to pull all of this kind of unmanned aircraft-related information into one kind of handy guide that they can use as they conduct their various business activities. I think, you know, if you're a member of some other industry group that
wants to implement drones, I agree with you. It's a good match. It's educating the people who are coming from the outside into drones. It also has the ability to educate someone who knows drones how to operate safely in the environment that they would be actually subcontracting to. So it's a good communication piece, a good set piece or a good start so that the drone operators as well as the tower owners have a common language to talk about. So I think you're right, Max. This is a great first practice.
Yeah, and if I was in the leadership of the organization of wedding photographers or an organization, an agricultural organization, or any of those groups that can use drones as tools in their business, I would go look at this and model something for my own industry after this. I think Nate has done a really good job.
Okay, Max, you threw this one in late in the day. This is from Yahoo.com, also from U.S. News and World Report. How to invest in drone technology. Okay. Now, the disclaimer is we didn't write this article. We're not recommending you do any of this. So don't try to sue us when you go bankrupt because you invested in some organization that created quadcopters and invented one and it went bankrupt. Take it away, fearless leader. How do we want to invest in drone technology?
Well, it's a question I get asked all the time by people who are observing the drone industry, looking at the forecasts, and they want to invest in something that they think is a growth industry. They want to know how to do that. Well, this article has some interesting ideas and thoughts on that. One comes from Ian Smith, who he actually hosts the Commercial Drones FM podcast. He's also an employee at Drone Deploy. And what he points out is that a lot of companies are pivoting because they look at DJI and you say, well, how do you compete with, with that? And it's difficult. So companies are looking at other business opportunities. One of them is components, sensors, gimbals, cameras, all the bits and pieces.
Peripherals, as we used to call them.
There is an example in this article pointed out that goes back to it. It's an analogy from the gold rush of the 1800s. And you look at who made money during the gold rush, it wasn't the prospectors. It was the people selling picks and axes and dynamite and services.
Liquor.
And other things.
Wine, women, and song.
Those were the people that made money. And that maybe an approach like that is, advisable when you're looking at investing in the drone industry. Think about the peripherals, the associated components and services, and invest in those companies. So that's one point it makes. They also talk about U.S. companies that are really focusing on drones, companies like Lockheed Martin and GoPro and Boeing, Amazon, UPS, Intel, companies like that. So, I mean, that could be an investment option. Another one is that there are some, or at least one, I think there are several exchange-traded funds, ETFs, that are investing in the commercial drone market. So it's an interesting article if you are interested yourself in investing, putting your money in the industry. This article's got some thoughts, and I think it might help you make some decisions. So we'll offer that up.
All right. Well, we'll continue with the business of drones. And this is from PRNNewsWire.com. Centera adds True NDVI to DJI Phantom 4 Pro drone. So here's a company, as Max says, that is not competing with DJI, but instead adding value. Did you have to do the value added thing? I don't want to play BS bingo. I deal with that all day long. What's an NDVI? And that's not David Vanderhoof International.
No. This is an agricultural term, I guess. It stands for Normalized Difference Vegetation Index. That's NDVI. And basically what it does, or simply I'll say what it does, is you create images of crops and using this technique that will show you where the vegetation is healthy, where it's not, and so forth. So Centera, instead of designing their own drone, what they've done is they've designed some sensors that measure this and offer some good capabilities. And what they're doing is you can send them your drone, your DJI Phantom 4 Pro, and they will attach the sensor to it. Or if you like, actually, you can have them purchase the DJI, the Phantom, for you, and they'll send you a complete unit. Instead of competing head-to-head with a drone maker like DJI, think about adding value in a different way. Think about, in this case, an agricultural application. So I think it's a great story.
We're back to the old school computer analogies when you could start writing software for Microsoft. That was a game changer, you know, or apps for Apple. So this is really no different. So let's talk a little bit more. How about, speaking of Microsoft, Aerial Informatics and Robotics Platform, Microsoft Open Source Aerial Informatics and Robotics Platform addresses the large data needs for training and the ability to debug in a simulator. So you need to learn how to fly your UAS. Well, Microsoft has got some software to help you design the program. What do you think?
It is. It's a simulator that lets you test and train unmanned aircraft or robots in a virtual environment. Something that, as you mentioned, David, it's open source. So we'll point that out and have a link to the Microsoft webpage with more information about this. I think this is a great move. It's interesting that Microsoft is developing this kind of capability. They do have some experience with simulators, but here we have one that might be useful for those doing UAS design.
All right, let's talk about parachutes. Besides one of our lovely sponsors, developed some for drones. Amazon's got another patent, the Amazon Patent of the Week, which is, this is from Fox News, Amazon considers parachutes for drone-delivered packages. Okay, well, like I said earlier, my beloved C-130s used to do something called LAPES, which was the C-130 would do a touch and go, and out the back, via being pulled out the back of with a Sheridan tank, would be three, or a howitzer, would be three parachutes, and it would safely deliver the truck, but sometimes it wouldn't, and what you would get is a ball of metal. The reason why we don't do LAPES anymore is because at one air show, we had a ball of C-130 end up on the runway. But in this Amazon patent, they want to fly over your house and bombs away with a little parachute, and your package would gently drift down. And hopefully it's a nice still day and there isn't much wind blowing and your package will land on your front lawn. The problem with that is that's a lot of variables and parachute delivery is not very effective. Ask anybody who jumped out of an airplane on D-Day.
You know, this patent covers sort of the broad idea of ejecting the package out of the drone and then getting it to land where everyone wants it to. And as you say, David, parachute is one method that's contemplated in this patent. They also take a look at, believe it or not, landing flaps to direct the package and even compressed air canisters. So this kind of completes, I think, the final delivery method for package drones. In the past, we've seen drones that drop the package via a fine cable. We've seen drones that land on the ground and deliver the package. Now we have an idea or some ideas for drones that spit out the package and then somehow direct it to the right spot. So I guess we've got all options covered. I don't know if there's any others out there, but I can't think of them.
So until next week, what we have the Amazon patent of the week for next week.
Yeah.
Parachute delivery is very, very difficult.
Mm.
I have witnessed at various air shows. I'm going to take a few minutes to tell you a story. At one point at McGuire Air Force Base, they used to do an 82nd Airborne airdrop where they would drop the whole 82nd Airborne on the parachute over the airfield. And they would do this also at Andrews Air Force Base. They would use 6 C-130s and 6 141s, and they would drop lots and lots of people with parachutes. At the McGuire show, the wind got out of the way, and in the middle of the airfield was a large rotating radar dish.
Uh-oh.
And one of the 82nd Airborne guys' parachute landed and got caught on said radar dish in the middle of the air show. And for 20 minutes until they could get out there, turn off the radar, and get him down, he was going around and round in circles. So parachute delivery, I think Amazon wants a patent on, but I don't see it being a practical thing. And what happens if the chute breaks or the chute lands rough or whatever? It's not really an effective delivery system, even though we do it with paratroops and Humvees, etc. I don't recommend it. So enough on that. Let's talk about breaking news. You never did get us our breaking news audio. Verizon goes airborne with the acquisition of drone management firm Skyward. Now, this also came from our Slack team. What's Skyward? We know what Verizon is. I hear a pin drop. But what's Skyward, Max?
Skyward develops drone operations software. And if you go to the Skyward website today, it says Skyward is a Verizon company. That just happened today, I believe. And for an undisclosed sum, Verizon purchased Skyward. Skyward says their drone operations management platform, combined with Verizon's network reliability, trusted brand, and expertise in building enterprise solutions, will help Skyward deliver the solutions our customer need faster than ever before. Now, we did see in the past, and I believe we mentioned it, that Verizon has their airborne LTE operations initiative, and they had actually been testing some wireless drones. So Verizon is not completely new to the drone space. It will, I guess, remain to be seen how Skyward gets incorporated into Verizon's strategies, what the synergies are between the companies, and how that changes Skyward.
And it's an acquisition that's a not a vertical, but a lateral. So Verizon is not trying to make the drones, but they want to make the technology to use the drones. And back when we had the Democratic National Convention here in Philadelphia, I remember this one of these topics was using drones as flying cell phone towers.
Right.
So this is where this comes in, where you hoist the antennas up and for a temporary event using a UAV as a cell phone tower to increase the cell phone technology, you know, like they need at, if you've been to Oshkosh in their downtown square, whatever it's called, the center square, the moment you walk in there, your phone goes dead because there's not enough cell towers to handle all of the people that are standing there. So interesting technology. We'll have to follow it up. I know there's some concerns that were voiced about Skyward being absorbed by something like Verizon, but it sounds a bit, at least for now, that it's Skyward is going to be owned by Verizon, but considered a separate entity. What do you think, Max?
It's hard to predict how these kinds of acquisitions turn out. Sometimes the statements about or the intent is benign and everybody is happy, and then over time that changes a little bit, and you know, by then it's all a different kind of a story. I'm not saying that's going to happen here, but here's a little startup being absorbed by a telecommunications giant. It's kind of hard to imagine that there will be no effects on, you know, the employees of Skyward or what their life is like. But hey, I don't know. We'll remain optimistic for now.
Okay, well, we've got a video a week. This is from our friend Isaac, and he posted this to our Slack listener team. Eagles are the new anti-drone weapons. The French armed forces are using Eagles to take quadcopters out of the sky. We've talked a little bit about this. I believe my beloved Dutch were the first ones to do it. It looks like the French are following up.
And they're starting at the beginning, at the very beginning, as in with the eggs. And they're raising these birds to perform this specific task. The video is very interesting. Now, it's in French, but if you don't speak any French, it's still interesting and you can get the idea. The training that these birds go through is pretty interesting, and they easily take these phantoms down out of the air. As I was watching this, one of my concerns, and I think it was a concern I had when we talked about birds before, yeah, is what about injury to the bird? And in at least a couple of the shots, I noticed that the birds were wearing, kind of like protective sort of gloves. I mean, their talons stuck out of them, but it looked like the handlers here were, very concerned about making sure that the birds weren't injured. And of course, if for no other reason than if, you've raised a bird from the egg for this task, you really don't want to be injuring these birds. So thanks to Isaac for passing that along to us.
And gimmicks don't make better pizza. This actually aired for our Super Bowl and we missed it, which is the Papa John's commercial. And it's pretty funny. It's a good take on drone delivery, at least the current state of drone delivery. I don't want to spoil much of it. You need to go watch it. Come to the website. We'll send you the link to the YouTube page. So thank you, Patrick. As he says, Patrick in Utah. We always appreciate our listeners, our Slack listener team, as well as anyone who writes it to us at feedback@theUAVDigest. So send us your videos and your stories.
Yeah, and we are getting some great conversations going on in our Slack team. It's really gotten quite active. So if you haven't checked that out yet, you can learn more by visiting the uavdigest.com/team, and that'll get you started. Well, I think, David, that's about it for this episode. We want to thank you all for listening. This has been episode 183 of the UAV Digest. So as you've probably figured out by now, if you want to go straight to the show notes, just visit the uavdigest.com/183.
And of course, you can follow us on Twitter @UAVDigest. We do want you to become part of our Slack team, which is the UAVDigest.com/team. That will tell you how to get in touch with us, or you can just send us an email to feedback@theuavdigest.com. We would love for you to leave a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. How do you listen to us? And of course, we have swag
at our Cafe Press store, and you can become a patron of the show. Or, and don't forget, we also have a Facebook page. That's facebook.com/theUAVDigest. So with that, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.
This episode was sponsored in part by Unmanned Systems and Solutions. 30 USAS technicians repair all types of drones in their 120,000-square-foot professional drone repair facility. USAS also offers full-service operations consulting and programs for commercial and government users. Visit unmannedsas.com/UAVDigest to learn more about how to get your drone repaired.